Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Elshree Gladden. I'm a USA Today bestselling author with over 30 published novels and a ninth grade teacher who is in the home stretch of this first year of public school teaching. And I've got on the show today, I'm really excited for this interview because I could not put this book down aside from being constantly interrupted from reading. So I'm really thrilled to have Karen Anderson on the show today, and we're going to be talking about her book, What Falls Away. Karen, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay. My name's Karen Anderson. I'm a Utah native. Sometimes I haven't always wanted to be, but when it really comes down to it, I'm happy to call this place my home and call the very different and remarkable range of people my people here in this state. I write about people, places, and perplexities of the American West because that's where I live and that's what I pay closest attention to.
And this really is an area that's so diverse and so unique and different from a lot of other places in the country. I think that's kind of a fun thing of living here, and you probably see the same thing where you're at, where it attracts a lot of people from a lot of different places, and you kind of get to hear their thoughts and their reactions to living in the Southwest. And you learn a lot, or you're like, oh, yeah, I guess that would seem weird to someone else, or that's a different kind of experience.
I think that probably also drives a lot of my writing. I do hear a lot of experiences and a lot of responses, and I read a lot about people's experiences. They come here and come to the West. And a lot of times I feel like, you know, that's really great, but I'd like to answer a little bit. You know, I think in some ways the West and its people are, even among ourselves, kind of fraught with stereotypes. And I just don't like stereotypes. So for me to write from the real ground, write the characters and the people that I know and understand to a point and wish to represent in fuller and richer ways. And that really does drive a lot of the reasons I write.
I can see that definitely. And before I get completely off track, because I have so many questions and things to talk to you about, but before I go off the rails doing that, I do want to have you give our listeners a brief synopsis of what the book, What Falls Away, what it's about, and the general concept of the book.
The book is written in two timelines, set in 1970s Utah. All of those sections you can track because they're written in past tense. And then there's 2019 Utah written in present tense. I'll just, in some ways, maybe just read from the back of the book because I think it's a decent summary. Cassandra Solberg, pregnant at 17, was cast out of her community by religious leaders, returning to her rural Utah hometown after nearly 40 years to care for her senile mother. She meets a young man with an uncanny resemblance to the father of the child she was forced to give up for adoption. Drawn back in traumatic scenes of young adulthood, she must reconcile with her past in the fiercely beautiful landscapes that shaped her.
I always appreciate when I see a good summary because they're so hard to write.
And you're a teacher, so. Yes.
There's so much to this book, and there's no way we're going to cover everything in a 30-minute interview. Right. But hopefully we can give our listeners a sense of what this is, and for my part, why I found it so fascinating, and I just gobbled it up, which I read so much that sometimes it really takes something special to take me out of everything else that I'm doing and just be like, no, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to read for a couple of hours and I'm going to shut everything else out because there's always a million other things. But this was one of those books where as soon as I started reading, I was texting my boyfriend. I was like, you're going to have to read this book after I'm done. It's fascinating. I've already like blown through three chapters when I should have been sleeping.
Well, so, thank you so much for telling me that. I really appreciate it.
We'll just dive into it, I guess. Part of the reason that I was so drawn to it was that I did grow up in the Mormon faith and started to raise my kids in that, and ultimately made the decision with my husband at the time, we're divorced now, mm-hmm. that to leave that faith because of lots and lots of reasons that we won't get into here. You know, so that was something that reading this and seeing the character Cassandra growing up in environments and ideologies that were very familiar to me, and a lot of those really hard experiences that as a teenager, as a young mom, all of those times that just really stick with you and shape you and have this effect that's really hard to process in the moment.
Uh-huh.
And you've kind of got to spend a lot of time after the fact unpacking it. And there were just so many of those familiar things in this that I was just like, oh, I totally get this character and what she's going through. And it's been a while since there was something that I just related to on such a deep level that I just, anytime I was not lesson planning or grading or doing something else, I was sitting down and reading this, and it was really nice to just feel so connected to a story like that.
You know, that really means a lot. I feel the same way in so many, I think in a lot of ways the book is written for anyone. I made this one Latter-day Saint because it's part of my upbringing, and it's something that I've had to keep coming back and coming to terms with. So in some ways I gave my protagonist Cassandra a more concrete and literal homecoming. She doesn't come back to Utah or doesn't come back to her hometown and really isn't in touch with her family for nearly 40 years. So when she comes back, she has a fresh set of eyes. She comes back with a lot of course, anger and frustration. And she comes back after telling herself she never would return. But it gave me a chance as the author to be able to go back on a lot of scenes and situations and a lot of cultural values and sometimes cultural cliches and give myself that kind of fresh, not quite outsider's eye, but insider outsider eye. There's a lot when we talk about novelists, one of the things we do is try to estrange ourselves from familiar things, step away so we can look at it with a different kind of an eye. So Cassandra was a good character for me to write because she does have so much deep inside knowledge, and also she's sort of coming back and seeing it fresh and new. And that double perspective was really important and really helpful for me, because as much as we may, any of us, from any kind of culture or religion or ideology, as we try to depart from that or try to answer to that and trying to become our own selves, it's disorienting. It's not something that we ever leave completely. And I think I've probably reached a point of, I'm probably old enough at this point that I realize I don't really want to leave my culture and my people, and certainly not this beautiful geography that I love so much. I don't want it to leave it behind. It's not that I'm not that anymore. It's just I'm that and a lot of other things too. Mm-hmm. And so for Cassandra to come back and have kind of an insider's eye, I appreciated what one of my friends, who's a really fine reader, Scott Abbott, said, that Cassandra comes back and she can't stereotype all of the people that she encounters, even if she wants to, because she knows them. She knows them by name. She knows their histories. She knows their distinctions. And I think that's what a novelist ought to do. I think that's what we should be doing as writers, is certainly say, okay, here's a nice inside view of this culture, but we're looking at the people. So I'm not interested in representing Latter-day Saints. I don't really want to see this as a Latter-day Saint novel as much as the tension between growing up with something and reinventing ourselves and then sort of returning to consider those relationships and connections. But I did want to make sure that the doctrinal representations and the cultural representations were very accurate. It's very important to me that I don't fabricate any of those parts.
And I thought you did a wonderful job of that. And that was something that struck me reading this, that yes, this is a culture and a worldview that's familiar to me, but mm-hmm. there was also so much of it that you could take that out, analyzing it, and really apply what she's going through and what she experiences as a child and then coming back as an adult to mm-hmm. any experience of coming home to something that you've left behind and really having to face everything that you, I guess, thought you left behind
Yeah.
But right. But you come exactly. back and you realize, like, oh, I didn't, like, you know, this is all still very much a part of a person because it's what shaped you in those young years, you know, good and bad.
Absolutely. Thomas Wolfe says you can't go home again. And sometimes I think, no, you can just never leave home at all. You can't do it. It stays with us. And I think for Cassandra, that's what she's really coming to terms with. She has not really departed. And she does need to return. She has a reason to return, a very bossy older brother who says, you better come back home and take care of our crazy mom. But, you know, really, is she realizes it's time for her to return and reassess or reclaim in certain ways that she feels more in control of, I think, than she could, of course, earlier on.
Well, and I really liked that about this, that it was not an angry book. There's a lot that whatever it is that a person is leaving, whether that's a faith, a community, a region, a marriage, there's always a lot of strong emotion. And uh-huh. you can hold on to that emotion, and that can be the thing that you take with you when you leave. But that wasn't present in this book. I really appreciated that it was a compassionate look back at what she'd experienced and what that life was like, and using that compassion to try to come to terms with some of the more difficult and traumatizing experiences that she had in order to, like, right. make peace for herself. It wasn't about the religion or the other people. It was her finding her way through this really difficult time, even as in the more present storyline of her coming back to help with her mom.
Sure. Yeah, I've had quite a few people comment, you know, on how richly they relate to just the meanings and the experience of coming home to an aging parent and feeling those roles reversed. You know, suddenly she has full control over her mother. Her mother's very childlike. And that reversal is very, again, very strange for her. So she goes back to a lot of familiar things, but they're all kind of pretty literally turned upside down or inverted in the ways that her mother and her relationship is. I think if I would have tried to write this book 20 years earlier, or if I would have sent her home 20 years earlier, probably a lot more of that anger would have been there and a lot more of another kind of emotional processing than she has now. So in some ways, again, for this book, for this story, it was important for me to bring her back after she'd really kind of dealt with those things away and on her own and comes back feeling like a whole person. It's a very different way, I think, for her to return than if she would have come back 20 years before, probably a height of a great deal more anger and tension. Of course, there's the loss of that child. There is something unforgivable in that return. They took her child. And that's, to me, and I think to her, just the unforgivable point and the irreconcilable point that she has to live with.
Yeah. And I think that that's an interesting area to focus on, because with mental health and counseling and being more aware that it's okay to work through things and have help doing that mm-hmm. in today's world, that's thankfully a more prevalent thing rather than just pack it away, don't think about it, don't talk about it. And she's able to show readers that process that she went through away from home, what she was able to work through, but what's still there. And
right, right.
She does come back having had a whole life away from this town, away from her family and the people who were part of the whole situation and part of a lot of the trauma and the hurt that she experienced. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting that she came back and she's ready to do this duty, basically. Uh-huh. Like, okay, I'm here. Like, I don't want to be here. But she can't just pretend her family doesn't exist at that point.
Right.
So you immediately see, like, there is still this connection. There's still this compassion. She feels this need to come back and do this thing that her brother's asking her to do of taking care of her mom. But we still see where those walls are very firmly in place with her.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting with her bedroom, her childhood yes. bedroom. That's a very firm boundary for her. And then you have some more emotional and mental boundaries as well. And mm-hmm. I really liked that portrayal because I felt like it was realistic. It wasn't like, okay, she comes back and everything gets resolved and they all make amends and, you know, like happily ever after. It was realistic. Right. These are the things that you can work through and deal with. And then there are always going to be those certain aspects that are like, no, I'm not.
Yeah. Right. They made me and they're done making me. So, yeah, that closed bedroom door is very important. She returns to her mother's home when the place of a great deal of trauma for her as a child and adolescent. She cleans out her mother's storage room. She kind of takes over and puts everything to right, but she won't ever, through this novel, enter her childhood bedroom. She leaves that door closed. And she also doesn't disturb her father's tool shed that's out in the back that's been sitting there locked for apparently a long time. None of her brothers will enter it either. So there are certain closed spaces that are important for me to keep closed, even though the proximity is tantalizing. And even toward the end, there's something in that bedroom that she's going to have to retrieve in one way or another. So I guess in some ways I take a little bit of pleasure in tormenting her on that, but this isn't something that she'll ever fully gain control of. Maybe that's what it's about. We can't simply create ourselves clutter-free. We're very complex people and we're made of complex things. And like Joan Didion said, sometimes, you just have to open the door and see who's giving you a hard time. See which past self is demanding to be recognized and acknowledged and claimed in certain ways. So there was, I think, a little bit of an echo of other voices, other rooms, lots of authors who talk about closed rooms, and also just Freud, spaces that can't be accessed, but we keep returning to again and again. That's really fascinating imagery to me.
That is. And that was something. This is a very character-driven story. It's not a mystery. There's definitely elements of figuring things out and sorting out some issues from the past, but it's focused on the characters, on the people. Obviously, mainly focused on Cassandra, but then the people around her, both family and friends that she's come back in touch with,
Right,
and
right.
surprise interactions that she's not expecting. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your process of developing your characters, because I would say anybody who's struggling with that as a writer, this would be a great novel to pick up and read critically to study
Right.
that, because your characters are very realistic, very human, and very relatable. And that's often a very difficult thing to do. What is your approach to creating these characters?
I appreciate you asking me that because I really am a character-driven author. I feel like the thing that keeps me writing is my interest in character and in creating very rich characters, complex. And again, maybe that goes back to what I said earlier on. I really chafe under stereotype. I've had enough of it myself in my own life. I've read hundreds and hundreds of pages of student writing of people who I learned to never walk into a classroom in my 30-year teaching career and assume that I would know what any member of that class would write. And I was always surprised. And maybe that contact with just such distinctive people and such remarkable stories is, one real legacy of my teaching career. I've had peculiar and remarkable and generous access to other people's lives and stories and motivations, and that's just profoundly affected the person that I am. But I have found I really struggled in a lot of sort of writing programs because the place I come from almost always entails a cast of thousands. They're just people around all the time. There are cousins and there are relatives and there are families that move together. I grew up in a way where there's no sort of single character stories. I really created this novel where I put a woman in a situation where she had to sit still and she had to pay attention to the parade coming in and out of her mother's house. So she's forced in a certain way to just take time and pay attention. She's an artist and she's a visual artist, and so she's trained herself in visual ways to do that. But for me, I think I really needed to push her to, okay, you don't want to come back. You don't want to know these people. You don't want to listen to them. You want to have them all figured out. And so she has to sit there with her crazy mom and let the Relief Society come in and out, let people come in and take care of her, let her brothers and their children gradually start showing up. But I had to kind of slow down that train. And so for me, I do work to put, and to me, the only real purpose of plot is to put people under certain kinds of pressures that will let them show us who they are. And this was a great deal of pressure on her to come back and attend and take people one-on-one and get to know them again or get to know new people. In some ways, just reassemble her perceptions of the world that she thought that she left behind. And sometimes it's confirmed. Sometimes it's exactly what she thought it was. But in other ways, there are very meaningful revelations and surprises. So for me, plot is really important. And I think it through carefully and structurally, mostly to say, okay, how can I put my character in this place? And then once I start writing a scene, I really do listen very carefully. I try to draw from a very deep reservoir. I don't steal other people's stories, but I try very hard to track something similar or somebody I know. I combine people who I've known a long way in the past, member people, and I have kind of a tape recorder mind. And so conversations come quite easily to me because I spin conversations around in my head constantly. Sometimes I wish I could get rid of them, but it helps me as a writer. So I listen. I have a way of kind of remembering the tone and quality of people's voices. I like the way people phrase things. For me, the way people talk is my first way in. And then remembering gestures, remembering patterns, trying to find something in every character I bring to the page. And I really mean this. Even if they show up for a minute or knock on the door and disappear, they need to be distinguishable and memorable. And we need to feel like we can follow them on out to another story, and that story would be just as fascinating.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's a wonderful way of looking at it. And it's interesting. My students did a creative writing project before spring break, and I had to remind myself as I was grading that I wasn't actually grading their writing. I was grading their understanding of the elements of storytelling. That's what our our unit was.
Right.
Because, ninth grade writing is surprising and challenging at times.
But it's always those funny little revelations. A lot of times, especially with students, is those inadvertent moments where they relax, they forget about the assignment, and they say something remarkable. And I listen for people to do that in real life as well. I'm just very intrigued. Sometimes I'm not a terribly assertive, firsthand, tell me your story kind of person. I'm a little shy about that. So I tend to make sure I'm listening to conversations when I'm in a room. I watch the ways people respond and move. And then I really make sure that I take it in when someone relaxes and tells a story, because people do tell remarkable stories about themselves. But I'm not usually interested in their moral of the story. I'm more interested in the sort of funny things that fall out that maybe don't always feel like the point of the story, but for me, they're the most fascinating. And I think people are made by the places they live. I mean, I think that's one reason I have such a great relationship with Torrey House, my publishers, is people are created by the geographies and the geologies and the plants and the nature and quality of the sky and the nature of the water. People are made by the landscape that they inhabit. I really believe that. And again, one of the reasons I'm so fascinated by Western characters.
That is very true. I think place and that environment is really important in framing so much of a person's identity, how they see the world, how they interact with it, who they interact with definitely
Absolutely.
Plays a big role as well. And I think that those are such interesting details to sit and observe and take notice of and then use and put into your characters to make them real and interesting. That was something I think anybody who reads this will take note of pretty quickly, is that, like you said, even the characters who are only there for a page, they're memorable. And you feel like, oh, I know someone like that.
Right. That's absolutely true. And as a fiction writer, I don't really think that I can get to the inner thoughts and the motivations of every character. And I think this is important in our time for any character writer, anyone who's writing character at all. People reveal themselves from the surface by how they move, by what they say, by how they change or interact in certain situations or among different kinds of people. And people do tell a lot about themselves. I go inside of Cassandra's mind to a certain point and narrate as strongly as I can from anything that she might see or understand or be able to process. But I hope that what's really going on is she becomes increasingly capable of reading and answering and understanding the people who come to her.
I think that that is definitely something that you see throughout the story. Like I said, I knew I wouldn't get through hardly even a tenth of what I wanted to talk to you about, and we're already at that point to start wrapping things up.
But it's been a great conversation.
I could do this all afternoon, probably. But I did want to ask you, what are you working on now, and kind of what can people look forward to seeing? Because I know I would definitely like to stay in contact and have you back to talk as soon as you're ready with something new.
Well, I'm excited to talk about it because I'm closing in on the final chapters of a parallel novel. It's not a sequel or a prequel. It's a side-by-side novel to What Falls Away, and it follows her son's life. It's called Things I Didn't Do, and it follows the boy who was lost, who is Cassandra's literal biological son, but she has never known him, and he doesn't know her. He grows up in eastern Utah, kind of Price and Green River area. He's a cute cowboy, and I'm wildly in love with him. And it lets me just say quickly how much I love writing about children. He's not a child throughout this whole piece, but again, because I come from generational people, there are always children present in what I write. And I don't necessarily write, in fact, I don't write for children, but I write about them and I portray them quite often. And so following this little, his name is Ryder Mickelson, and Ryder and his two cousins, who are just really close and are sort of brothers to him, spending time in that region, again, spending that time in Carbon and Emory County, and also some time up in Juab County, up in a town that really resembles Eureka a lot, because I spent some time there, actually as a public school teacher up there. Let's me put characters in a different place. I'm enough of a Utah to know that Utah characters are very regional, and they're quite different from one county or one geography to the next. And so it really lets me sort of focus on a different kind of history and a different kind of relationship to the Book Cliffs and to the West Desert and some of the regions of Utah that I love. Maybe just to close that up, to say why it matters to me. I really admire what Melanie Raitone says in The Voice of the River. That's a kind of a polyphonic novel, multivocal. A whole town is coming out looking for a boy who's fallen in the river with his dog, and they hope to find that teenage boy. It's a beautiful novel, but what keeps recurring again and again is this question: if you love this child, why don't you love all of the children? Why do you need this one? Or why is this one the object of your love and affection? And why isn't this one too? And I think Cassandra has to ask that question, especially as she meets some of the children of her hometown and the children that have grown up in her family. If you've lost a child, or if you don't know who your biological parents are, then the whole world is your family. Everyone's your child, and everyone is potentially your parents. So answering back from the boy's perspective and the boy's lived experiences let me really think richly and wonderfully about my sons and about the boys that grew up eating in my kitchen, and I'm really excited about it. It feels like a really gratifying answer to writing What Falls Away.
That sounds amazing, and I look forward to reading it and talking with you again. You're wrapping up the final chapters, so
yeah,
in a bit.
I'll send it. It's contracted to Storyhouse, and I'm really excited. I love working with them. The two books will really ultimately stand as two volumes of telling very different stories, but tracked along the same sort of key events and timelines. That will be released in 2025.
And aside from the Storyhouse website, which is storyhouse.org, where can people go to follow you and stay up to date on what you're doing?
I do have a Facebook author page that I should be much more righteous about. I'll make sure I am. It's just Kay Anderson, but if you type in Karen Anderson author or Great Basin writer, that would be one good place to do it. And I'll make sure that I keep posted on some of that work. I have some shorter things coming out. It's been fun to sort of turn to some short work. This next novel really feels like wherever my heart was when I wrote What Falls Away, it's let my heart stay there. And that's really been a pleasure.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Karen, I hate to wrap this up because I could keep talking to you forever, but we are out of time. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show this week and chat with me. Again, the book is called What Falls Away, and that's Karen Anderson. And I did want to mention Karen is spelled K-A-R-I-N, just to make sure people can find you.
Yeah, that probably helps. So thank you so much. What a pleasure to speak to someone who's read it so generously. You have all my gratitude.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.